seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
The NBA is back. Major League Baseball is right in the middle of spring training. And the NFL offseason is just heating up. Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. I'll tell you, this time of the year is the best time to be a sports talk radio host. And if I go back 365 days ago, we had no content. We had no sports going on. That was a year ago. I remember we had to rack our brains every day to produce a sports show that was somewhat compelling and had some engaging conversations because nothing was going on in the world of sports. It was fun, but it's not nearly as fun as what we have going on right now. Here's what's on tap for the show today. Locally, we are going to talk soccer. Got to get Emory Soccer off and rolling. And here's the difference in a year's time. There's so much local sports going on because of COVID-19 that an hour is just simply not enough. We can't get every single team in day by day or segment by segment because that's all the show would be coaches interview after coaches interview. So yesterday, I had an opportunity to catch up with Coach Troy Winter of the Emory Spartan soccer squad, and we talked about a really competitive group that he has coming back this year. In fact, a group that this coaching staff has been grooming for four seasons. They have 12 seniors on this year's team. Right now, Emory already taking on Richfield. That game started about 5 minutes ago, but I am going to play that interview for you next segment to kind of set the tone for the season. Also, we have to talk Major League Baseball, and there are some fun storylines popping up. Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, will join us on the show today. Here's a feel-good story. Steven Strasburg, he pitched a few innings last night, and he was really good. I think he had 6 Ks. 8 batters, 6 Ks, not a bad ratio, right? But he's in the second year of a massive contract extension that the Nats gave him after they won the World Series close to 2 years ago. Had carpal tunnel surgery. There was a loss of feeling in his hand. And you wondered, boy, was that massive contract extension, which I don't blame the Nats for giving him, is it going to bite him? That's a good sign for Washington and manager Dave Martinez. All this talk about the Dodgers and the Padres and the pitching rotations that they can deliver throughout the year, I'm still looking at the Nationals and saying they have Strasburg, Scherzer, and Patrick Corbin. It's not too shabby. I don't believe the Nationals are a team that we can look at and completely disregard in an uber-talented National League. I also want to talk about Yadi Molina. Briefly got into Yadi yesterday. This guy is phenomenal and he's timeless. And Bill Lasky also has some connections, obviously, with the San Francisco Giants. Former pitcher for the Giants, now an analyst for that squad. And they have a guy by the name of Buster Posey, who is equally as impressive. Is Yadi and Posey, are they both heading for Cooperstown? I tend to think so, yes. I do. I think that those would be the next two catchers that would get in once they hang it up. And let's be real, both are towards the end of their career. I think that's a fun conversation. So we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. And as far as the NFL is concerned, we talked about that all day on the show yesterday. It was the deadline for teams to use the franchise tag, so free agency shaped a little bit yesterday. We're still about a week off, exactly 1 week from right now is when the new league season will begin. And then you really hit that free agency frenzy, which will begin next week. And so it's just a great time to be a sports fan. And we also have the conference tournaments going on right now for college basketball. Selection Sunday's right around the corner. It's a great time. Let's look at the NBA. They will resume from the All-Star break tonight, yet there's only two games on the slate. The Wizards will take on the Grizzlies. Start time for this game is set for 6 p.m. tonight. Bradley Beal going up against Ja Morant. That's the one-on-one matchup that you can watch. This game's not on national TV. And so if you're an NBA League Pass holder, watch it for that matchup alone. Bradley Beal and Ja Morant. Last year's rookie class, it was completely stolen by Zion. And I understand that because the kid is just phenomenal. But so is Ja Morant. I mean, he's averaging 19-7 right now as a second-year guard. That's a fun matchup. Wizards, Grizzlies. Plus, the Wizards were actually playing pretty good basketball heading into the All-Star break. 6:30 tonight, one other game. We get the Spurs and the Mavericks. Both teams right now jockeying for playoff position. The Spurs 2-up on the Mavericks in the loss column. That's DeRozan versus one of the most exciting players in the league, and Luka Doncic. I can't get over how talented this kid is. That game will be on NBA TV tonight. Some news coming out of the world of college football. This broke yesterday that Les Miles is out as head coach of the Kansas Jayhawks due to allegations of inappropriate behavior toward female student athletes when he was at LSU. Now, these allegations date back to 2013. And Kansas moved fast on letting go of Les Miles. Well, today they decide to move on from athletic director Jeff Long. He's going to step down as AD. Now, the two, I'm talking about Les Miles and Long, they have a long-standing relationship going back to their days at Michigan in the late 80s and early 90s. This Kansas Jayhawk football program is just one thing after another, it seems like, for this team. They've made some splashy hires, but none of them have worked. If it was Charlie Weiss, if it was Les Miles, they've made the splashy hire. But for some reason, this college cannot. Ever since Mangino, that's when this program went downhill. Mangino had them playing in BCS bowl games. They were playing in major games. Since Mangino's been out, this program has been out. If you're a Kansas football fan, God bless you. I know a couple, actually. That's what's happening in the national sports scene right now. We'll break for just a moment. Local sports recap is coming up. But again, we'll talk high school soccer and Major League Baseball. That's all straight ahead on this edition of Drive Time Sports.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL. 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We have so much local sports going on right now that, seriously, an hour a day is not enough for us to talk to every single coach in the Castle Country, because right now, the JUCO level, we have volleyball, baseball, softball, basketball, all that's going on at the moment. Spring sports season yesterday, we had baseball and softball start. We have soccer today. There's just simply not enough time here on Drive Time Sports. And so yesterday, I had the opportunity to catch up with Coach Troy Winter of the Emory High School boys soccer team. And I'll tell you, the expectations this year surrounding this soccer team, fantastic. They got 12 seniors on this year's team, and I always look forward to catching up with Coach Winter. Emory right now taking on the Richfield Wildcats on the soccer field. So here's our interview from yesterday with Coach Troy Winter previewing the Emory soccer season. I know you and I were talking a moment ago, and the expectations surrounding this year's soccer team makes it a lot of fun. I know you guys have 12 seniors coming back, and Coach, we can start by talking about the idea that we didn't have the spring sports season last year. Things were halted, and I've asked this question to each coach. What did you do during the summer, maybe even the fall months, to prepare your boys who basically lost a year?
Unfortunately, you know, some of them, you know, they play a little bit of club soccer, so we worked on that, with a few of them, and then the rest, we got started up in, you know, as far as winter with futsal, had a lot of really good crowds, you know, with that, and with working out with that and stuff. Basically, just everything that we could do, just trying to get them out, touching a ball, because, you know, like you said, some of them, you know, lost that year, And unfortunately, you know, it's kind of a hard thing to regain when you don't touch a soccer ball for a year during competition, and then you try to come back and do it again. You kind of have to knock the extra rust off and everything. So, but I'm very optimistic of the players we have coming back and the kids that have played outside of, you know, high school, have played some club soccer. We've got a really good club program going, and so some have taken that opportunity, and it's been really good for us.
Coach, with all that being said, how many of your kids had to rely on other sports to stay in shape for soccer? I know that in rural areas, we have a lot of multiple sport athletes, but how many kids had to rely on that?
A lot, more than half, absolutely. There was a lot of them that were actually, you know, went and played football, played basketball, wrestled. So they were doing a lot of other things as well too, which is obviously good. You know, like you said, in a rural community, being able to share athletes and use athletes together and stuff. And that obviously really helped us out. And we get kids that, you know, just come off a swim, just come off a wrestling, just come off the basketball, and they're already kind of in shape, as far as, you know, physical shape, mental shape, as far as, you know, being ready to be competitive. And, now we just have to knock the rust off with them getting used to kicking the ball, you know, and playing soccer. So it's a good task at hand right now.
Well, you have 12 seniors on the team, and so mentally you have to believe that these kids are a little bit seasoned from that aspect, mentally mature, and I'm sure that plays a big factor into it as well.
It does, absolutely. One of the things I've learned over time here as far as, you know, with seniors as well too, is they understand that, you know, this is basically their last time, you know, to put on the soccer cleats and, you know, to be able to make it work and stuff, you know. So they're ready to go out and, you know, kind of prove themselves, and, you know, and mentally, you know, all of them are matured and are very, 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 very good kids. Very good kids. I'm looking forward to the senior group. They're a good group of kids. So
to have 12 of them, Coach, you've seen this entire process. You've seen these kids since they were freshmen. And so this is obviously a season that you as a coach and as far as your coaching staff is concerned, it's something that you guys, I'm sure, have looked forward to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are very much looking forward to it. You know, we've got some seniors that, you know, like I said, have played club ball, you know, have taken opportunities to excel, you know, outside of just, you know, high school soccer, and really bring a really good presence to the team, you know, with our players that, you know, do multiple sports, you know, and then come and play soccer and enjoy playing soccer with us, you know. So I'm very excited. It's one of the things trying to get all the cogs on the wheel running together, you know, the gears, so they're not grinding and just smoothly turning. You know, I use that analogy with them regularly, you know, and once that happens, I mean, there's going to be really great things. I'm really expecting good things from these guys this year. So
obviously, it's a team sport, Coach, but when you look at the individuals that have made progress over the last 4 years for the senior campaign, where are the expectations at individually with some of the individual players that you believe will stand out this year?
We've got a few of them that, like I said, have played club ball. You know, Colton Childs has really excelled over the last 4 years and really puts his heart and soul into what's going on. Thomas Johansson, you know, same thing. And there's a kid that loves soccer and probably wasn't the greatest gift born to soccer, you know, as far as athletically. But he has worked very, very hard, you know, over the last 4 years, in and out of high school season, you know, plus club season, and just really, really loves the game. So I'm really expecting big things from him. Bo Cook is a returner as well too. I'm expecting big things from him, and then there are several on down the line that like I said, you know, play multiple sports, you know, and stuff, but now they've stepped into this soccer role. That's what they're focused on, and so I'm really looking forward to, you know, them making their individual accolades, even though it is a team sport, you know, achieving them at, you know, individual goals, and wanting to play at the next level, you know. So that's what we're here, is to try to encourage and develop, and maybe they can do something for the future. So
again, our guest right now is Coach Troy Winter, again, of the Emory Spartan boys soccer squad. They'll kick off the season tomorrow on the road against Richfield, and Coach, you're off and rolling after that. I mean, you got a tournament in St. George, and then right after that, next week, March 16th, region play against South Sevier.
Correct. Yep. And we're ready to go. You know, things are, like I said, you know, you go down and knock the rust off. We go down to St. George and we play some pretty, you know, tough teams in St. George and everything as well too. So we're going to go down there and give them our best, you know, and have a good time. You know, all boys always look forward to this trip. It's a twofold purpose trip. To be honest with you, gives us an opportunity to play a lot of soccer in a short amount of time. Number one, and then be able to mold each other and have some team unity and, you know, working together and stuff. and basically having some fun together. You know, realizing, you know, all these kids come from different backgrounds and everything, and getting them together and having them have a good time together is a lot of fun as well too. So
you'll play three games over the course of 2 days, correct? Friday and Saturday.
Correct.
Yeah. So three games while you're in St. George, one against Richfield. So you got four games, Coach, to prepare for that region opener. And not to take anything away from region at all. Region championships, I know, that's always the first goal that teams set. But when you don't really have a lot of time to get set, it's not basketball where you got 8-10 games or baseball where you got 8-10 games. Coach, is it more important to just be playing your best soccer come April rather than getting off to a blistering start and taking control of region in March? I mean, obviously you want to do both, but playing your best soccer in April, that seems to be probably the most important thing, especially with RPIs.
Absolutely, I agree with that. You know, 100% is you know, I mean, the first few games we get into it right into region, but the first few games you're trying to figure out a little bit of identity. You're trying to figure out roles of players. You know, how the team, you know, team identity. You know, and just having that cohesiveness between players and stuff. I would much rather go in. You know, for example, last year, over the last 4 or 5 years, you know, we go down to St. George, and some games we get our socks beat off. But we come back, we regroup, you know, and come April, we're playing really good soccer. And I'm a firm believer in playing. If we're playing at our best at the end of the season, then we're going to go further into, you know, into the state playoffs and, you know, into that competition as well, too. So, I would love to just be able to go through and win them all. But I'd rather start off knocking the rust off and finish just fine-tuning everything and playing really well in April.
Yeah, at what point in time, Coach, in the season do you look at things, typically, historically, have you been able to look at things and say, okay, this is what I'm rolling with, this is the rotation, this is what I'm comfortable with? How long does it typically take, knowing that you only have a month and a half? I mean, that's truly what the spring soccer season looks like. It starts tomorrow. First round of the state tournament is April 30th. It's amazing to me how condensed this is, but you basically have a month and a half to figure that out.
Right, absolutely, and it is. It's one of the, as we have coaches have always discussed this. It's amazing that we try to cram all this in, and you know, in a month and a half. You know, so our rotation is generally changing, you know, throughout the season. You know, and stuff, and we start off, you know, in this set rotation, as we play, as we figure out players, you know, strengths and weaknesses. That rotation is going to change, you know, multiple times throughout the season, and then also depending on our opponents that we're playing as well too. We make an adjustment, you know, here or there, for strengths or weaknesses of an opponent we're going to play, to match our strengths and weaknesses as well too. So, I'm very, very fortunate that I've got, a core bunch of boys that are very versatile and they can play multiple positions, and play positions and do, the things that I ask them to do, you know, even if it is out of the norm for them. So that's a really good thing, you know, for a soccer player to have.
Yeah, and on top of everything else, obviously, you got to rely on a coaching staff. And one of the things that I've always appreciated at Emory High School, you guys typically have a lot of continuity when it comes to the coaching staff. Any changes this year?
No. Me and Darren Olson are still coaching together. The one person we did bring in is we brought my oldest boy Brock in. He's kind of on a leave of absence with his mission, and so he's had the opportunity to be able to come and help us out and stuff, and so we're kind of looking forward to that. It's going to be a little bit interesting, but he's just helping us out for just a short time and stuff. But other than that, it's still me and Darren Olson, and he's been a mainstay with the program. I can't say enough about him and the things that he's done, because you know he hasn't had a boy playing, you know, for the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, 7 years, and he's just stuck in and through thick and thin with me, and I'm very appreciative of that. So
yeah, I think sometimes assistant coaches get overlooked in the world of high school sports. They play such a pivotal role, though.
Absolutely, I would agree. He has made me. I'm a soccer guy, but he has made me a better coach. I really honestly feel. I mean, my coaching abilities have been made better because of his help with me and his personality, and making everything work the way that it does. So.
Well, Coach, I love the fact that the spring season is finally here. We've waited over a year for it seems like. And so definitely looking forward to more conversations with you in the very near future. You guys travel safe, and best of luck this weekend as you play a lot of soccer in a short period of time.
Yep, I appreciate it very much, and I really appreciate the opportunity. Thanks, Jordan.
Again, that's Emory soccer coach Troy Winter. We did that interview yesterday previewing the season, which it's off. It's underway. Emory right now with a road taking on the Richfield Wildcats. Then they get some, they have some games coming up this weekend. They'll play three in 2 days. So we have a lot of soccer to talk about. We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we're going to move over to the national scene. We'll talk Major League Baseball. Steven Strasburg has made his return. It's great news if you're a Nationals fan. We'll also talk about the growing legend of Yadi Molina. That guy's been the pillar of consistency for the Cardinals behind home plate. Great baseball segment coming up with Bill Lasky when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We are dead in the middle of spring training. It's a great time for baseball. It really is. Everybody right now is undefeated. There's optimism floating around, even for Rocky fans. I know Rocky fans are optimistic. That'll probably float away a couple of weeks into the season. But nonetheless, everybody's undefeated right now. We get a look at what the future may hold for some of these squads. I love spring training. I get excited just thinking about it for that very reason. We're going to talk about some of the storylines circulating throughout spring training. And joining us right now over the phone to have that conversation, we have former big league pitcher Bill Lasky, who now is an analyst for the Giants with KMBR. And we'll talk more about that in just a moment. Bill, as always, each week, I look forward to these chats. Thank you.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Baseball is full effect right now, and everything from Florida and Arizona is starting to ramp up. Fans back in the stands. We're finding out here in California now that fans will be in the stands for opening day here in San Francisco and other California venues. And that only looks up for more and more fans to watch Major League Baseball once again.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. In fact, I got curious. Just wanted to see what the cost would be to go to Coors Field for a Rockies game opening weekend. And you're going to have to pay. But again, you get the atmosphere. You get baseball once again in the stands. You know, Bill, going back to last season, I thought having no fans in the stands would be difficult to adjust to. At least for me, by the time we hit game 10, 12, I honestly didn't even notice.
Yeah, you know, the only thing I didn't like was the fake crowd noises, you know, the fake cheering, the fake booing. It just got monotonous, you know, and everybody watching the games on TV knew that there was no fans in the stands. I'm sure they had to do that just to kind of imitate the fans and all the cutouts and mostly all the ballparks. Of course, the Yankees didn't do any cutouts. Here in San Francisco, they had over 20,000 cutouts. So it was... It was nay, yay, whatever you want to say, but now we're going to see the faces in the stands, you know, watching games in Florida as well as Arizona, seeing, you know, 1,200, maybe 1,500 people in some of these games. It's just a luxury to see it, and I'm glad it's coming back.
I agree. Let's talk about some of the storylines as far as spring training is concerned. And Bill, one thing that it was nice to see Steven Strasburg back on the mound because he faces six batters. He strikes out four. Remember, this guy is in the midst of a brand new mega deal. And I think that maybe we forgot a bit about Strasburg last year because we didn't get to see him. And then there were some concerns about the numbness in his hands. Look, he hasn't faced an opposing batter since August 14th. That's how long it's been since we have seen Steven Strasburg out on the mound. And so you're a former pitcher and you follow the National League, and we know how good this guy is. The Nationals don't win a World Series without Strasburg. He's homegrown talent. He is the face of the franchise in my mind. I thought he always was. It wasn't Bryce Harper. To me, it was Steven Strasburg. This is a guy that's easy to root for, and to see him back after having carpal tunnel surgery and to perform the way he did, I just thought it was beautiful last night.
Yeah, it was a big plus for him mentally, no doubt about it, to get back on the mound to throw against live hitters in another uniform, because he did some games and live BPs against your own teammates. And, you know, you're a little jarb, you're a little talking to him, you know, a little that. But when you go on the mound and you're facing somebody else, somebody in an opposing uniform, and for his dominance, he was dominant. And I agree with you. They would have never won that World Series if it wasn't Steven Strasburg. He put on a show.
in that World Series. And, you know, just getting him healthy again. And like I said, the mindset of Steven Strasburg to go on the mound and throw what he needs to do to keep moving up, to keep getting that brick to brick, to build that wall, to get going for the opening day season in April. So there's 3 weeks left. These guys have to gear up. You're seeing more pitchers go 2-3 innings now as starters. You're starting to see some of the bullpen arms starting to go a little bit more every other day. And this is what you're going to start doing. You're starting to ramp up now. And literally, it's probably from March 15th on is when you're going to start seeing regulars play a lot more.
Yeah, and as far as the pitch count, Davey Martinez was talking about it. 35 pitches, that's what's expected as far as some of the spring training appearances. And so I would assume, Bill, that Martinez would probably handle Strasburg a little differently than, say, Max Scherzer or Patrick Corbin, even though both of those two guys have a strict pitch count. So at what point in time, coming off of a carpal tunnel surgery, can we expect Steven Strasburg to have no limit and the Nationals to use him regularly?
Well, I don't think there's going to be a time gauge. I think it's just going to be on how he feels and how they feel, how I can ramp this up. You know, you might not see him start another game. You might throw him on the side, or you might throw him against your hitters the next time up to amp up to 40 pitches to 60 pitches. But I don't think there's a gauge for these guys, especially coming off of injury, by saying, hey, by the middle of May, he'll be 100%. Because I don't think anybody knows except Steven Strasburg. And I think the positive that we all dwell on when we watch guys like this pitch, it's step to step. It's brick to brick, as I call it, because those are the things you want to keep building and not subtract and go negative. So I look at him. I look at a lot of other pitchers. You know, you see Trevor Bauer now throwing with one eye open and one eye closed to try to get his perfection down. You see a lot of other starting pitchers. Kevin Gausman here, who is the ace for the Giants, hasn't pitched one game in spring yet. And they're not worried about him. He's throwing on the side. He's trying to perfect a couple pitches. And I, like I said, March 15th is my target date. From March 15th on, now you got to build your team and start worrying about that April 1st date, opening day.
Again, Bill Lasky, our guest right now as we talk Major League Baseball. Bill, there was some news coming out earlier this week as well. Jackie Bradley Jr. finally has a team. Took a little while, longer than I would have expected, but he's going to make his way now to the National League. The Brewers signed him to a two-year deal with a player opt-out clause after this season. When you take a look at what Bradley managed to accomplish in 55 games last year, batted .283, 7 home runs, 22 RBIs. I think he had 5 or 6 stolen bases as well. When you can add a player of that caliber to kind of anchor the middle portion of your outfield on March 10th, this seems like a no-brainer, and I'm surprised that it took Bradley this long to find the right place.
I agree with you, and I think a lot of the teams maybe offered him a one-year contract like a lot of the free agents did. I think he held out to see if he could get an extended contract, and he got 2 from Milwaukee. That's a great addition for Milwaukee. Milwaukee's going to have a good team. That's a surprise team that you need to watch out for. And he brings you that guidance in center field. He brings you that leadoff hitter. He brings you that speed on the bases. So it's just another asset for the Brewers. And they waited, and I'm sure a lot of teams wanted to see. And I knew the Giants were interested in trading for him last year with Boston. So there was a lot of eyes on him. I just think it comes down to communication, agreements, contracts, and what kind of language they have in them.
Correct. Yeah, I agree. When you look at that Brewers outfield, and if you want to use Jackie Bradley in right, you're going to be able to, and that's probably where he plays the majority of the time because you got Lorenzo Cain, and if he can stay healthy, we know what he's capable of doing, especially once he gets on base. So you look at Yelich, Cain, and Bradley, it's a pretty solid outfield. I agree with you with this Brewers team. I even love what they have coming out of the bullpen with Williams, who was outstanding coming off a Rookie of the Year performance. Freddie Peralta, I think, has found his role as a middle reliever. You have Josh Hader in the closing role. I don't know so much about the starting rotation for Milwaukee, but I think when you look at the position players and also going out and grabbing Colton Wong, I mean, this is a team that has speed, and if they can keep it close, this is a team that can get you with that bullpen.
And I think you put a big question mark. The starting rotation has always been a problem with the Brewers. There really hasn't had a consistency out of them, and I think that's one of the reasons why you got more offense now by getting Brantley Jr. And you know, putting him in the corner and maybe even center field too if Lorenzo Cain can't go. But that is a dynamic outfield. You got speed, you got good arms, You have nucleus of experience. So, you know, the Brewers are in a good situation. And, of course, they're going to have to contend with the Cardinals. And the Cardinals, I think, are pretty much slated as number one in that division right now.
That was going to be my next question for you, because we always talk about, we've talked a lot about the NL West this offseason, and rightfully so. It is going to be the most exciting division in baseball. I firmly believe that. However, when you look at that Central, the Reds got worse. They didn't get any better. They got a couple of players I'm excited about. The Pirates seem to be a borderline AAA squad on what they're going to be rolling out this year. They're going to be sellers at some point in time of the season, and we're going to see some of this youth coming up. The Cubs, they're in a rebuilding phase, whether they want to admit it or not. I mean, they have a couple of players in this team. I believe they become sellers at some point in time this season. So it really boils down to the Cardinals and the Brewers. I think it's a two-pony race in the Central.
I agree. And the Cubs have kind of pulled back their reins. They really didn't push that much. Sure, they got Jock Peterson. But again, you know, Javi Baez is a free agent, so you don't know what's going to happen to him next year. There are question marks with the Cubs, and we've heard from over the winter that they were going to pull back reins. They were trying to trade Bryant. I think he's still an option to be traded. But again, I don't think the Cubs are nearly as strong as they used to be. And I agree with you. It's going to be Brewers and Cardinals. And you know what? The Cardinals just have one solid team again. They're right back in the thick of the race, and they're going to contend. And they're looking not just winning the Central, but they're talking about contending against the hated Padres and the hated Dodgers that are coming out of the NL West, because there's no doubt those two teams are definitely looking past the Cardinals, the Brewers, the Mets, anybody in the East. The Padres and Dodgers feel they have the two strongest teams in the NL.
Yeah, and a team that I just cannot believe continues to get overlooked, and maybe I'm wrong on this, I just don't feel like the Atlanta Braves are getting enough preseason attention. I just don't.
You know, I'm going to throw another team to you, Miami. I think mm-hmm. the Marlins have a real good team. They have youth, and they picked up some players. And I'm looking at Miami as that surprise team, too. And I agree with you. Atlanta's stud. They got a stud team. They're building each year. They're getting better, picking up players left and right. And I think that team, too, just like what you're saying, I think Atlanta and Miami are surprise teams.
Bill, before I let you go, I want to stick with the NL. We'll jump back over to the Cardinals here for a moment, because Yadi Molina is doing something right now that is it's pretty rare in Major League Baseball. When you look at the pillars of consistency behind home plate, especially on the defensive side of the ball, I'm hard pressed to think of a handful of catchers that I have seen over the last 20 years that I would rather have behind home plate. And when you look at what he's been able to do, tallying up over the last 16 years since 2004, and you look at the attempted steals, St. Louis had more than 400 fewer attempts than the next closest team, and that is absolutely a byproduct of Yadi Molina being behind home plate. How special is this guy, and how much fun have you had watching him over the last decade or so?
Oh, tremendous. His arm is just raving every year. You just wonder how he does it. Getting behind the plate, going in the squat time and time again. The age also is starting to wear on him. And don't forget about the guy out here in San Francisco, Buster Posey.
Right.
He's been back from taking a year off, and he's right up there with Molina. But still, it's just a great asset for the Cardinals to have him behind the plate. He's like another coach. He demonstrates those things during the game, talks to his pitchers. Wainwright's coming back. I just think they got the nucleus back to make one more run, and I think those are the two guys that they wanted, and there's no doubt. I mean, he's just like another coach, like I said. He is that intelligent, and people listen to him when he opens his mouth.
Yeah, and that thought popped into my head when you said the Cardinals have another solid team. And when you go back over the years and you look at how this team somehow, I mean, it was, what, 2 years ago, they were in the NLCS. I know they got stomped by the Nationals, but they were in the NLCS. They were four games away from the World Series, and nobody could have predicted that at the beginning of the year. When you look at the consistency of that organization, I think Yadi Molina is the poster child for it. It's a statistic that we don't look at. It's not one of those razzle-dazzle statistics, right? Especially in the world of sabermetrics and everything that we have today. But the fact that since 2005, there's been 400 less base-stealing attempts against the Cardinals, that right there is an analogy for just how sneaky good this franchise has been.
100%. And saw it in spring training with the runner getting a lead off. He throws to first base. And he says, go ahead, try it. Try to steal. Go ahead, try it. And he threw him out by 3 feet. I mean, just his mentality, just his being a competitor, just the confidence he bestows in that Cardinal uniform. I mean, Cardinal fans love to have him back. They were trying to recruit him as soon as the year was over. Sign him again. We still want him. You know, and it's going to be really hard to fill that role once he retires or once he moves on, because Cardinal fans, just like NL fans, when you see the Cardinals, you want Molina behind the plate. You want to see him throw. You want to see him receive. You want him to dictate what the pitchers are doing. And all I can say is Molina and Posey both are top-caliber catchers in the National League. And I'm sorry to say this, but I'm maybe not sorry to say it. I can see them both in the Hall of Fame sooner or later.
No, no doubt. I agree with you 100% there. And there has to be a place for them, especially with the way we've seen the catcher position change over the last, decade and a half. I agree 100%. Bill Lasky, again, our guest right now. Bill, we got to talk about your other ventures. I know you're a very busy man, especially on the weekends right now.
Well, busy as time. You know, KNBR is my new home. It's a sports leader out here. You can pick it up on the stream. I'm on pre and post games on Saturday and Sunday, 2 hour pregame, a 2 hour post game, and just kind of going through Giants. And it's really a Giants radio station. They just signed another 4 year extension with the San Francisco Giants. So KNBR will be the home for another decade, which is excellent. And it's just good baseball talk, interviewing players and understanding what's going on in spring training. A lot of fans want to know, and I kind of bring that out to them, but different kind of world doing radio. I know you have been doing it for many years, and I'm excited to continue to keep doing it and looking forward to a pretty good season by the San Francisco Giants, and hopefully they'll surprise some people in the National League West.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun division, that's for sure. Bill Lasky, always a pleasure, Bill. Look forward to the conversations next week. Thank you again.
Yep, take care, and hope your fans of this radio station enjoy it, because I know you and I love talking baseball, and we give it our best.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's best time of the year. Thanks again, Bill.
All right.
We'll take another quick commercial break. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM, Eastern Utah's home for the Utah Jazz.
Well, a couple of minutes here on Drive Time Sports, loaded show, fun baseball conversation with Bill Lasky. Love talking baseball with Bill. Love talking baseball this time of the year in general. Tomorrow's show, it is going to be a little bit different. We're going to divide it up, half Drive Time Sports, half pregame coverage, because USU Eastern Basketball will make its return here to KOAL tomorrow. So we will talk NBA, get you set up for the Utah Jazz, who will make their return on Friday out of the All-Star break. We'll be joined by Tom Perkins of HoopCityNews.com, and then we'll talk to Coach Chelsea Warburton. Had an opportunity to catch up with her already today. That'll be the pregame show for tomorrow, and then we'll go in to tip off as USU Eastern gets set to take on Nevada. It'll be a doubleheader here on KOAL. The girls' game, that'll get moving at 5, and then right after that, I'll be joined by Travis Anderson for the guys' contest. That's coming up right here on KOAL tomorrow. We do have a scoreboard update for you in high school baseball. The Emory Spartans open up the season with a 4-1 victory. They top Providence Hall, and that begins a very busy weekend for the Spartans. They're going to return to the field tomorrow. They'll play again on Friday as well, and then next week they travel for a road trip. So one home game and a lot of road games coming up for Coach Rob Smith and his team. Congratulations to the Spartans on opening up the season with a 4-1 victory. We'll talk more about that on Drive Time Sports tomorrow. I will see you then. Be safe. I am out.